This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
We have received widespread reports of increased mortality in the maternity units, in the general wards, in the casualties. We've had reports of those who pass away in the hospitals not being certified dead because there were no doctors to do so.
That's Dr. Fortune Nyamande of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights on the impact of the lingering doctor strike in the country. Details coming up also. Election fever is mounting in Botswana as voters prepare to go to the polls on October 23rd. And in Tunisia, the chaotic election season took another dramatic turn as one of the presidential candidates, Nabil Karoui, was released from jail last night. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, as the Zimbabwe doctor strike drags on, rumors are circulating that the government has recruited 50 foreign physicians. As the country's economic crisis worsens, the local doctors say their salaries are so meager that they can't even afford to go to work, leaving them incapacitated, and efforts to treat patients are hampered by shortages of drugs and other critical medical supplies. Reporter Kuzaza Nwash has the details.
Early this week, doctors rejected a government offer of 60% pay rise, saying it's not enough with the inflation rate skyrocketing. Dr. Fortune Nyamande is with the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights.
It compromises the right to health to most patients across Zimbabwe. We are aware that our healthcare system is majoritarily driven by the public health sector. The absence of doctors in these facilities will have very devastating consequences to patients accessing healthcare across the country.
He says the plight of doctors is genuine, as he equates what doctors have been earning to an equivalent of $100. Nyamande says government has dragged its feet in addressing the situation.
It has been a very sad story for most patients across Zimbabwe. We have received widespread reports of increased mortality in the maternity units, in the general wards, in the casualties. We've had reports of those who pass away in the hospitals not being certified dead because there were no doctors to do so.
Mercy Mutanda, who suffers from colon cancer, is proof ordinary people are hit hard when doctors do not show up for work. She says, I was on chemotherapy for cancer of the colon, but I have since been taken off since the strike started. I have no idea how I can get help. I am in pain. As you can see, I am shivering as I am standing here. Nyamande says doctors are most concerned by patients with terminal diseases such as Mutanda.
We are extremely worried by the plight of cancer patients because we know that a disruption of their treatment regimes, particularly radiotherapy and chemotherapy, can result in what they call tumor cell repopulation. This would mean that if a cancer patient has been receiving either chemotherapy or radiotherapy and their regime is disrupted, they may be worse off even if one would try to resume the treatment at some later point in time.
While there are no statistics about those that have been affected by the strike, what is certain is it is a bad time to get ill in Zimbabwe. Those who do either suffer without help or resort to private health institutions whose services are so expensive that very few can afford them. Ironically, that includes the non-working doctors and their families. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In more news from Harare, the Zimbabwe heads of Christian denominations is calling for the suspension of elections for 7 years. a proposal that has sparked mixed reactions. Rutenda Mweri reports from Harare.
The church group says suspending elections for 7 years would enable economic, social and political healing and development of a shared national reform agenda. Zimbabwe Heads of Christian Denominations Secretary General, Reverend Kenneth Mtata, said no single political party can solve the country's problem.
We have prayerfully come to the conclusion that in light of the current political paralysis, deepening mistrust, and dehumanizing economic decline, the nation will need to take a bold decision to address the root causes of our national challenges that have a very long history and will not be fully resolved by one entity.
Mutata said the church group has resolved that the current political crisis can only be resolved if Zimbabwe is not in a perpetual electoral mode.
In this light, we are calling the nation to sabbath on all political contestation for a period of 7 years to allow for the rebuilding of trust and confidence, reset our politics, and chart a shared way forward towards a comprehensive economic recovery path in a non-competitive political environment.
Mutata added that shelving all political contestation and focusing on healing past wounds would allow the ailing economy to recover and cultivate a new political culture of cooperation anchored on nation building, thereby helping the country move forward. The church leader said they were not proposing any detailed government structure for the 7-year period, but such an implementation must emerge from a process of consultation of citizens at different layers of society. Farai Maveza agrees with the proposal.
It's a very sensible idea that the churches have come up with, and people should not be distracted by the 7 years that they mentioned, but they should look at the thinking behind what the church said, because if you look at the past 2 years, the problem that we have had as Zimbabweans is that we have just spent the whole time just fighting and fighting. And in Zimbabwe, we have demonstrated, particularly in the last 20 years, that we don't know how to solve our political contestation. Everything around in our country goes around political contests. An election is held today, and for the next 5 years, all we hear is people fighting about that election. So I think what the churches are saying is something that both MDC and ZANU-PF should take heed of, and even the supporters of the two parties, if they really want this country to move forward, they should.
Pedzisai Ruhanya, a political analyst, disagrees.
To fix the economy, you need to fix politics. The churches are not addressing the problem. In fact, what the churches only say in their statement is that Mnangagwa has failed. So if Mnangagwa has failed, what has that to do with the elections? ZANU-PF will never allow a situation where someone is in power without them on top.
The main opposition, MDC Youth Assembly, also scoffed at the church's proposal. National spokesperson Stephen Sakho-Zichuma said suspension of elections will not solve Zimbabwe's problems.
As the MDC Youth Assembly, we do not agree with the position of the Zimbabwe head of Christian denominations, where they have said it's better to postpone the elections for the next 7 years. We are of the view that it will set a wrong precedent where leaders would deliberately subvert the will of the people by stealing elections in the hope that they will stay in power through a negotiated means.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission declared Emmerson Mnangagwa the winner of the 2018 elections, a victory confirmed by the Constitutional Court but not recognized by the MDC. Mnangagwa early this year called for a national dialogue with political parties that participated in the 2018 elections, but rival Nelson Chamisa has ignored the dialogue, calling it biased and non-inclusive. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Election fever is mounting in Botswana as voters prepare to go to the polls on October 23rd. Former President Ian Khama has formed a breakaway party following policy differences with his hand-picked successor, President Makwetsi Masisi. And an opposition coalition also is campaigning to form a new government. From Habrone, Botswana, Mokandisi Dube has more.
Botswana, which enjoys relative peace and stability, is pressing for a crucial election on October 23. Botswana's fourth president, Ian Khama, is vigorously campaigning against his successor, President Mokgweetsi Masisi. The two former allies have clashed over policy differences, which led to Khama to quit the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, BDP, to form the Botswana Patriotic Front, BPF, in April. While the stakes are high, some voters are still undecided.
My final choice will be based on an individual, not the party. It's the most expensive one, an exciting one, and I'm really waiting for the day to come so that I'll see where my vote will go.
Khama's influence in the country's central district, a traditional stronghold of the ruling BDP, makes the election too close to call, says analyst Zibanani Maundeni.
It's for the first time that the BDP will be going into an election without a stronghold. And this brings a lot of uncertainty in our politics to the extent that it's difficult to predict what is going to happen.
While analysts predict a close contest, the main opposition party, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, is also campaigning hard to win on October 23rd. A coalition of three parties, it poses a major threat to the BDP, and its spokesperson Moedi Mohasa says locals should prepare for a new government.
We have a split BDP. That gives us a chance, and we are hopeful that we will win this coming elections. People should brace themselves to a new government.
But BDP activist Murekolodi Moemeli says President Masisi is their trump card at the polls.
Botswana, do we have trust in Masisi's administration? Ever since he took office, I see so many changes. There'll be chances of losing some seats there, but all in all, I see Masisi winning.
Since assuming office, President Masisi has reversed most of Khama's signature policies, including relaxing alcohol trading hours, lifting a ban on trophy hunting, and restoring relations with China. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Tunisia's chaotic election season took another dramatic turn as media magnate Nabil Karoui was released from jail last night, just days before the presidential runoff election. Sunday's vote pits Karoui against another political newcomer, law professor Kais Saied, who halted campaigning last Saturday to even the playing field. In the first round of voting, the populace dealt a major blow to the established political landscape by rejecting all of the experienced candidates. Disillusionment has replaced much of the optimism that flourished after the Arab Spring protests in 2011. The economy has spiraled downward with high inflation and unemployment. That was also reflected in the fractured results from last Sunday's parliamentary elections, in which 58.6% of the electorate stayed away from the polls, and the top party won only 52 seats, less than half the number required to govern. Just weeks after a wave of deadly xenophobic attacks, migrant workers in South Africa are facing the threat of being restricted from jobs. South Africa's Minister of Small Business Development is proposing a ban on foreign nationals who work in the informal economy's unregistered jobs, such as street vendors and saloons. Many unskilled migrant workers make a living in the informal sector, and they say such a law would devastate their livelihoods and those of their families back home. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's Minister of Small Business Development is pushing a radical solution to last month's clashes between locals and foreigners over jobs. Ban the foreigners. At least ban them from jobs in the informal economy, says Minister Kumbuzo Ntshavheni.
We as a department, we are going back and check within the provisions of our law that says within this threshold, foreign nationals cannot participate is a preserve of nationals. But we are going to be specific, like what they've done in Ghana, what they've done in Zimbabwe, in Angola, in Botswana. We're going to engage with cabinet to say, cabinet, if we're not definitive, there's going to be a problem.
Javeni says a ban on migrant workers in saloons, small shops and as street vendors would prevent recurring fights with locals competing for those jobs. Anti-immigrant violence that swept South Africa in September left at least 12 people dead, most of them South African nationals. The violence prompted Nigeria to repatriate hundreds of its citizens, while Malawi repatriated at least 75. But chairman of the African Diaspora Forum, Vusumuzi Spanda, says the minister's suggestion is shocking.
We are opposed to it because that is a violation of the constitution. It is not only cruel but inhuman. So it means that people will be actually closed off from getting any means of survival and supporting their families, which is all what these people want considering what they've run away from their countries.
29-year-old Zimbabwean Samantha Dube runs a nail and hair saloon where she trains her workers with new skills.
If South Africa stops allowing us to do this, it means the people that I'm empowering will also fall. The children that I feed will also be affected. I will no longer be able to take my children to school. My sisters that are going to school, it means they have to drop out. My parents, it means they have to suffer more and more.
Banning foreigners from certain jobs could also have a negative impact on South Africa's economy, which competes with Nigeria's as the biggest in Africa. The Sustainable Livelihoods Foundation in 2010 found that nearly half of small groceries in Cape Town were run by foreigners. The number of foreign-run small businesses is even higher in South Africa's Gauteng province, where many migrant workers live. Nigas Temesken is a member of the United Ethiopia Community Association of South Africa, whose members work mostly in the informal economy.
When we are selling belts, socks, so many small materials on the public areas, especially around taxi ranks and bus stations, we are also benefiting the economy. And the government must help people, support people. This is unnecessary. We are all Africans.
But for Minister of Small Business Development, Chaveni, South African nationals should come first even with informal jobs. As the issue is debated in cabinet, migrant workers in South Africa wait nervously and hope that other ministers disagree. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization reports progress in containing the Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, but says many challenges to its elimination remain. WHO reports the number of cases in the outbreak now stands at 3,207, including 2,144 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The executive director of WHO Emergencies, Michael Ryan, says he is largely optimistic that aid workers are getting control of the Ebola outbreak in eastern Congo. But he says it is impossible to say the outbreak is over.
It's not. It isn't possible to predict where the outbreak is going to go next. But I would stand over the fact that we have significantly contained the virus in a much smaller geographic area. Now we have to kill the virus. The problem is, it's back in areas that are deeply insecure.
In fact, the virus has come full circle. Ryan notes the disease has moved from Butembo and other urban areas to the remote rural town of Mangina, the epicenter of the outbreak. He says the virus is back where it began when the Ebola outbreak was declared August 1st, 2018.
So essentially, the virus is back in the same zone. So the factors that allowed that virus to transmit in low intensity for a number of months have not changed. Deep insecurity, reticence amongst the population, distrust, and many other factors continue to make this a very dangerous situation, but a situation for which I believe we are making significant progress at this time.
Ryan says WHO is increasing the scale of its operation, engaging in active surveillance across North Kivu province, and actively seeking new cases and tracing contacts to keep the virus from spreading. He says more than 230,000 people have been vaccinated against the deadly disease, and more lives are being saved among people infected with the virus who are coming to the treatment centers. He says the fatality rate among the nearly 800 patients currently in Ebola treatment units is less than one-third, a significantly better outcome than the two-thirds fatality rate reported for the disease overall. Still, this is the biggest Ebola outbreak in Africa since the epidemic across three West African countries in 2014 killed more than 11,000 people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It is World Mental Health Day, and reporter Kudzai Zanawashi looks at mental health care in Zimbabwe. Mental illness in Zimbabwe is something some societies are yet to accept as a medical condition. Mental-related illnesses are often treated as spiritual cases, which often deprives the patients of accessing health care.
Clara Nomen is with Friendship Bench Project, an evidence-based intervention program aimed at bridging the mental health treatment gap by providing problem-solving therapy. She says mental illness is often met with stigma in the society.
You find that there are increasingly high numbers of people who are being admitted into mental health institutions for one or another disorder. Therefore, a lot of people have come out and decided to just then talk about mental illness because you find it has been stigmatized. When you find that someone is being said to have a mental illness or is behaving differently, there's a lot of stigma there. Usually in our African context, people begin to say that perhaps this person has been bewitched. They don't believe that mental illness is actually an illness.
Lucy Arambe is with the Zimbabwe Life Project, an initiative that provides financial and technical support for mental health services. She says there is need for awareness about mental health.
More can be done to challenge that stigma. And one of the things that come to my mind is to bring the awareness to schools or to groups of people in families or in churches, just to bring that awareness that mental health is just like any other illness we go through in life. And support is required as soon as possible. And to encourage people to speak up or to come openly when they feel unwell, when they feel depressed.
Zimbabwe has a handful of mental health institutions and provides free care for mental illnesses, but the institutions are not adequately stocked with medicines. And the country's ailing economy may take a toll through excessive stress. Nomen explains.
A number of people who then come and sit on the bench, they come with a number of cases to do with depression, anxiety, or even substance use disorders. And many of them, if you try and then link and try and find out where the root causes, you could find that someone has been thinking too much because they're failing to make ends meet.
Critics say the effects of economic depression in the country are evident in the mental health services, where mental health institutions like other health institutions are underfunded and do not have enough specialists. As the world commemorates World Mental Health Day with a special focus on suicide, Zimbabwe joins the world as various organizations speak out against suicide and encourage mental illnesses to be treated for what it is, which is an illness. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zanawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable.
Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.